Velazan will be joining us shortly. The opportunity for us to get together is not an alternative to the normal schedule, but it's something which Rav Shem Derbeim and the Anhala and all the Talmidim feel is an integral part of our overall set of goals here in Yeshiva as part of VMP, to take time to share with each other, not just amongst ourselves, but also with the broader Chevra, the broader connection to various Rebbeim and Yeshiva. And we should see it as l'chatchila, not a b'dieved, not just an adjustment to the schedule for this week, but rather something that will ultimately help raise the bar and increase our different channels of avoda this week, Mirtz Hashem, leading up to Yom Kippur. We will have the pleasure this morning of hearing from Rav Moshe Tzvi, our Mashgiach, Shlita.
First, is it your brother?
That's right, bro.
Okay. Shortly. If there was a chorus that we had to designate as the refrain that repeats itself more than anything else over the course of the Seder Shmei, over the course of the entire day of Avoda, Shacharis, and Mincha as well, I would have to pinpoint Avinu Malkeinu. And it's strategically positioned as it is so frequently these days that it almost becomes like the anthem, the Seder Shmei Tshuva anthem for Klal Yisrael. And at the same time, it's very instructive because only a fraction of it, if you go through line by line various Avinu Malkeinu tefillas, only a fraction of it is really dedicated to the theme of tshuva and slicha and mechila. And that's obviously significant because what's supposed to emerge, if it's so frequently placed in the Nuscha Tefila, is to help our focus expand beyond just Aseres Mei Tshuva as Tshuva, and help additionally add time and concentration to other elements that are supposed to be at the forefront this week as well. And you see just from the very first few lines, besides Avinu Malkeinu Chatanu L'fanecha, which is of course the first, the Vidui and the Tshuva is definitely right there in front. But there's also Ein Lanu Melech El Ata, because of course the Malchus theme pervades the entire week, not just Rosh Hashanah, goes through Yom Kippur, Melech HaKadosh, as we changed in the Nuscha Tefila. And then without getting too far, you already have Avinu Malkeinu Chadesh Alein Shana Tova. Tefilas for the future, what's going to be this upcoming year, are also part of our preoccupation with what we are communicating with HaKadosh Baruch Hu about. The person has to reach out. The person has to reach out with his personal bakashas as well this time of year, because Hashem is closer than ever, and is listening and is waiting for us to communicate in that way. And that's probably the reason why we kick off this week, so to speak, one of the reasons, in the Haftorah, on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, with Tefillas Chana. Now, Tefillas Chana, the reason why it is the first Haftorah, the first day of Haftorah on Rosh Hashanah, on the simplest level, Chazal tell us, because Chana was answered, she was given a child, she was able to conceive on Rosh Hashanah, just like Sarah was, also on Rosh Hashanah, which is the parallel Kriya in the Sefer Torah preceding the Haftorah. But besides the chronology being important, of course, that it is commemorating a time in history thousands of years ago when there was a Pekida, when there was this aspect of Zichronos that was bestowed upon our Avos, our Nevi'im, at the same time, there's something I think a little bit deeper. And the reason is because Chana is where we see how to daven. Chana is the makor for so many of the halachos, and that sets a theme for how a person is supposed to be focused and what a person is supposed to be doing throughout this week, Rosh Hashanah through Yom Kippur, focusing on the aspect of tefillah that we're saying is part of the essential components of the Seder Shmei Tshuva as well. And it's not only how she davens, how loud she davens, etc., like the Gemara tells us, but even the psukim indicate v'haya ki hirvasol ispal of Hashem, v'eli shomer espia. What marks Chana's approach is that it's constant and it's consistent and it's the same tefillah. She's asking for the same thing again and again and again. That's also part of the avoda. Avinu Malkeinu has the same list of bakashas throughout the week, and we still say it dozens and dozens of times. She was relentless. At the same time, though, there's a great irony in Chana being the model for this aspect of avodas Hashem, tefillah. If you look at the way she dived into Hashem, so if we could say such a thing, it's almost as if she has a lot of chutzpah. She has a lot of chutzpah. I don't want to say that. I'm not saying that. But it's almost as if one could describe the scene in that way. She makes a neder to HaKadosh Baruch. She says, if you see what I'm going through, and you don't forget about me, and you give me this blessing of having descendants, of having children, I will dedicate my son, which she of course does, her son is Shmuel HaNavi, he'll be a Nazir, and he'll be given over to Avodas Hashem, he'll be in the Mishkan, he'll be traveling throughout Klal Yisrael, serving you on behalf of Klal Yisrael and being the intermediary throughout his life. That's the nether she makes. And what is this request that she asked? The phrasing is so important. I'm asking for a zera anoshim, a seed of man. So the Gemara in Brachos in Daf Lamed Aleph has a number of interpretations. Some of them are very surprising. Rav says, Gavra begurvin, Shmuel Omar, zera shemoshech shnei anoshim. Both Rav and Shmuel indicate that this tefillah was a request for a child who was really head and shoulders above everybody else. To the extent that he was the one, according to Shmuel, but this is what she asked for. It wasn't just that Shmuel ended up being the one to anoint, to choose the Melech, Shaul and then David, but that's what she asked Metchila. It wasn't just that he was successful in the end of his life, raising the bar and reaching a certain level, but that's what she asked for Metchila, that she should have the son who was ultimately going to be the one to anoint kings. And moreover, you go back to the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan Amar Zer Sheshakol Kishnei Anoshim, Man Inon Moshe Ba'aron Shenemar Moshe Ba'aron B'chonav U'Shmuel B'Kori Shemo. We say it in every week, Kabbal Shabbos. Moshe Ba'aron B'chonav U'Shmuel B'Kori Shemo. We're equating in that same pasuk, the same breath, Moshe, Aaron, and Shmuel. What's up, Pshat? So this is what she asked for: a Zera Anoshim, a Zera descendants, a descendant, a son who is equal to two Anoshim. Who are those two Anoshim? Moshe and Aaron. So imagine Chana, for years and years, suffering and suffering at the hands of Penina, who has lots and lots of children, who even ridicules her, makes fun of her, makes her feel terrible. This barren woman, for years and years and years, suffering, and she has the chutzpah to say, Baruch Hu, I'm gonna make an eder, and I'm going to give my son over to you. But only on condition that you give me the greatest man who ever lived as a son. Moshe Aaron, right? Kabbalah Satorah, the holiest person in the holiest place on the holiest day of the year, Aaron HaKohen. And I want someone who is equal to both of them combined. If I was a simple yid, and I was poor, and I was knocking on someone's door, you don't knock on someone's door and say, excuse me, sir, I'm down on my luck, can I have a 7-course meal? No, you see the guy in the subway who's begging just for a cup of coffee. Maybe a Danish, maybe some cookies, something simple. And nevertheless, Chana has the chutzpah to bang on a Kodesh Baruch Hu's door at the Mishkan and say, I want the best of the best of the best. Wait, where did she come up and make a bakasha like that? It's a pelt. It's mamash a pelt. So I heard a maisa once, which I think sheds light on this question. I'm definitely not going to be able to do it justice, but the story took place in Bridishev. And Dushas Levi entered the shul on Kol Nidre night. Everyone was ready. Their talisim saying Tefillah Zaka, and it's almost time to begin the tefillah. And the clock is ticking away. The sun is getting closer to Shkia, and still no start. And the Rebbe is still sitting in the front, no motion, head in the sitter, and everyone is wondering what's going on. And finally, the Gabbai comes and says, you know, what are we waiting for? So he says, I want you to go get Shmelka the tailor. Shmelka's not here yet, and we can't start Kol Nidre without Shmelka. So he sends him to find Shmelka. Shmelka lives in a little hut at the end of the city, the end of the town, broken down little house, falling apart. And he knocks on the door, and lo and behold, just like the Rebbe said, Shmelka's sitting there, not dressed, crouching in the corner of his house, and just waiting and watching. And then he sees that Shmelka's not preparing to go to shul, and doesn't know what to do. So he says, tell me what I should do. What's going on over here? Well, the Rebbe's waiting for you, and you're sitting here. Tell the Rebbe, I'm not coming to shul unless I have a matzah. So the guy doesn't know what to do. He goes back to the shul, and tells the Levi Yitzchak, okay, Shmelka is ready to come, but he won't come until you can guarantee him a matzah. So there's a lot of whispering and murmuring in the shul. No one knows exactly what's going on. Back and forth, the Gabbai and the Rebbe. And finally, the Rebbe sends it back and says, okay, tell him again. He has the matzah, and he gets the shmug. He says, okay, you can come to shul. The Rebbe says, you'll have a matzah. So he picks himself up, and he dusts himself off. And he makes his way slowly to the shul. And finally, when they get to the shul, start the daven. And Kol Nidre begins as if nothing happened. After davening, no one wants to leave. Everyone's whispering, trying to figure out what happened. What kept the Rebbe? What kept Shmelka? What we're waiting for? They're all leaning in to try to hear the conversation as Rabbi Yitzchak calls Shmelka in front of the shul. They all know they're in the middle of a Chassidus Shemais and they want to see how it comes out. And the conversation ensues. And he says, what were you waiting for? What were you waiting for? So he says to the Rebbe, you know, I've had some tough luck lately. I used to have a successful business. I used to be a big tailor in town. Everyone came to me with all their jobs. And I was doing well. And I had money. I put away money for to marry off my children and for our retirement. And little by little, things went sour. First, there was the fire that burnt down my store. And I had to move to a little hut and do all the work at the end of town. And I lost all my money. And as I'm getting older, my eyesight isn't as good, and my fingers aren't as adept at performing the malach that I'm supposed to perform. And I'm losing business, and I'm not doing as well, and people aren't coming to me. And my wife is sick, and my daughter's having trouble with shidduchim. Everything's going wrong. And last year, to top it all off, my wife died, and I feel like I'm broken. I have nothing left. And I said to Kadosh Baruch Hu, "You've taken everything away from me. You've taken everything away from me. What else am I going to do?" And I persevered. And then, just this last week, I had another fire. And I lost whatever I had still in my home. And all the jobs that people had given to me, they all burnt up and I can't even pay them back. And I lost my basic possessions. I don't even have a machzor. Baruch, if you don't give me a machzor, I'm not coming to shul this Yom Kippur. So the Rebbe said to him, this was the end of the story. There's no happy ending to the story. He said, all these tzaras, and you persevered, and you were still loyal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as difficult as things were. And when it came down to it, you had HaKadosh Baruch Hu by the lapel. You had him by the throat. You could have asked for anything. And all he asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu for was a machzor. That's the best you could do. And in a situation where you had reached the utmost levels of Avas Hashem, the best you could do was ask for a machzor. And that was the end of the story. And the message was, that sometimes we don't give ourselves enough credit. We don't give ourselves enough credit in terms of building the goals and envisioning the goals for ourselves when we look ahead at what we're capable of doing, what we're capable of reaching, and we settle for such petty requests that even though we have the greatest opportunity to ask and to strive for higher and higher levels, we're left asking for little things, like a mouse. What Chana was doing was realizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had put her through the ultimate test, and she was strong. And she knew that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a reason for everything he was doing, and the challenges that she was going through, there was a reason for them. And she would not suffice in asking for just the sun, just a few breadcrumbs, just a cup of coffee. But she said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're all powerful. And this is Mavur in the Pesukim. You're all powerful. You create people, and every aspect of their existence has a reason. There's no way that you can't do everything that I'm asking, because I'm calling out to you, I'm asking from the heart. But I'm not going to settle for less, because I know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you can grant more, and I know that if you are prepared to grant it, I have the ability to step up and reach what I need to do in order to be zochet to that and be worthy of it. There's a double message to take from that yisod. One is on the global scale. What Rabbi Yitzchak was saying to the tailor, maybe, was that you should have asked for Mashiach to come. You should have asked for Mashiach to come. You could have been thinking so much bigger than where you saw yourself in a very small corner of Redishev. You should have seen the big picture. You should have seen so much more that you could have asked for on the global scale, for the sake of Klal Yisrael. And that's one aspect. I saw a very interesting drasha just last night. Rabbi Lamb, in 1964, published a drasha that he gave on Yom Kippur, and it's fascinating to look at what the goals were and what the challenges were in the 1960s for modern Orthodoxy. And he let him have it. He did not pull any punches. But at the same time, he communicated things which just need to be translated a little bit for our own situations in order to appreciate what we should be doubting for. He comes at it from a medrash that says that Achasha Altimeis Hashem Oso Avakesh. What was David HaMelech asking? David HaMelech was asking, one opinion in the medrash is Malchus Sha'al. He asked for the Malchus. And the question on the medrash is, it says in the pasuk, he's asking for Shifti Beis Hashem. So what does it mean he was Malchus Sha'al? That the only thing he was thinking about when he wanted to be in the Beis Hashem was really just to be king? No, the answer is that he was asking like a king. Malchus Sha'al, he used the grand vision of what Klal Yisrael could be and what he could provide for them as the leader. for the impetus to be Shifti B'Veis Hashem. He was looking at it not just on the personal level, but what he could accomplish for all of Klal Yisrael together if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would only give him the opportunity to do so. And he notes that again, same idea, that we shouldn't be asking for breadcrumbs. He says we dare not be satisfied with 55,000 children in day schools. We must strive for 250,000 more. A royal reach is not satisfied with more synagogue members and bigger organizational budgets. It demands more Shabbos, more kashrus, more taras mishpacha. And he says, look at the Shemona Esrei. Look at the Shemona Esrei. It reflects itself. It reflects that same idea. You don't ask for just a general tolerance of observance in America. It's hashiveinu v'nol sarasecha. Everyone should have full commitment to Torah. When you ask for your parnasa, you're not just asking for a better deal or portfolio or a coup against a competitor, more comforts and luxuries and status symbols, but mevarech hashanim, a blessing for the years, for all people, for all times, all the colleagues. You have to think big. That's one thing to take out. But just to close, hu adin, there's got to be a personal thinking big as well. The Yom Kippur tie-in, most directly, is something we can extract from the inyan of Ne'ilas HaSandal, not wearing leather on Yom Kippur. So of course we understand that we're supposed to afflict ourselves, we're supposed to express various forms of inoy, even in the way we dress. So a little less comfort, we don't wear leather shoes. Okay? We also know that there's an aspect of not wearing leather shoes, which is medama ourselves to malachim, that on the day of purity, the day when HaKadosh Baruch Hu cleanses us of our averos, we have to see ourselves with that same high level of being with our eyes in Shemayim, like the Malachim. There's a twist on that, which is also significant. Maybe I heard this from Waxman a couple years ago. Ne'ilas HaSandal has another symbolism. In Nefesh HaChaim, the basic theme of Nefesh HaChaim is understanding that when you look at yourself in the mirror in the morning and you see your physical guf, you're really only perceiving a very small fraction of your existence in this universe. And in reality, what a person is on this world is actually the very bottom of a chain which links himself all the way up to the Kisei HaKavod where the Shorash of his neshama is. And the mashal that's used is the na'al. The na'al is the bottom level of the person's body, the shoe. But it's not just the bottom level of a person's body, it's the encasement of that lower level of a person's body. So a person's existence in this world, what you see in the mirror, is the shoe. It's a shoe. It's the way that you, so to speak, keep your feet on the ground from that connection that stretches all the way up to Shemayim. So Ne'ilas HaSandal, taking off one's shoe, means I'm removing the constraints that keep me too much rooted on this world. That just like a malach doesn't wear a shoe, the significance of that is not just that he doesn't need a shoe, and there's nothing that's going to hurt his feet. No, it means that he's not bound up, he's not restrained by the physicality of this world. When a person comes home from a long day at work, or whatever they happen to be doing, what's the first thing they want to do? They want to take off their shoe. Why is there such a geschmack feeling when you take off your shoe? I remember when I put on tefillin for the first time, so my uncle was there, and when you put on your tefillin for the first time, so I remember for months and months that challenge of like putting them on really, really tight, and then like the whole thing sliding down to my wrist. You know, it's very hard till you get it. Now it's like second nature, you don't feel it anymore. But I remember like my uncle kept telling me, just pull it tight and tight, and he told me he once knew someone who was so miserable that the only simcha and the only harvacha he could feel in the world was that he wore shoes that were too tight on him, so at the end of the day he could take it off and not feel gishma. Not sure it's the best mashal for tefillin. But you take off your shoes and you're like, now I have some room to breathe. I have the ability to relax. When a person takes off the physical shoe, when a person takes off the restricting, containing representation of Olam Hazeh and the human being at the very bottom of that food chain, he can also breathe a sigh of relief and say, see, Yom Kippur is not a day of inoy, of discomfort and being frustrated and hungry and dizzy and on my feet the whole day. It's a sense of relaxation, where I can be who I really am. I can let that neshama that's connected to Shemayim release itself and express itself, just like a malach can. And when a person enters Yom Kippur with that attitude, then his tefillos and his she'ifos and his aspirations, what he's looking forward to in the future, become the high-level goals that Chana set for us. The high-level tefillos that say, don't settle for just being another guy in yeshiva, just being another guy in BMP, but striving for what I know I'm capable of, that there were times in my life that I saw that on the horizon, Because I'm telling you one thing, and this is the punchline. As long as you're in yeshiva, you can easily walk into the base of medrash. You can look around your shir. You can see your rabbeim. You can see people who are clearly working on themselves to be better and striving for higher levels. Once you leave yeshiva, it's much, much more difficult to find on such a broad basis those role models and that example. It's too easy when you move out of yeshiva to just feel like, I'm part of the chevra, why daven here in shul? Or even better than that, I'm on a higher level than them, so why do I need to reach for even more? As long as you're in yeshiva, you'll be able to develop an even more acute vision of where you really can be holding, to daven for that, and I say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm not going to be satisfied with less, because I want to be closer and closer to this Yantiv, this Yom Kippur, and in future years, to always have high goals and to strive for the Mitzvah. Yes.
Okay, Brishus Rabbi Shnal and Rabbi Elazan. First of all, Shkayach Rabbi Shnal for enlightening us. I think I have a new understanding of why some guys in the Beis Medrash take their shoes off. There's the guys walking around, why are you in the Beis Medrash without shoes? So now we have a new understanding. Why you take off your shoes in the Beis Medrash to let your soul soar a little bit higher. I want to speak for a few minutes about cheshbon and nefesh. I want to speak about thinking and taking the time to think. Because I think probably one of the biggest challenges that we face in the world today is that everything is so fast-paced and life just keeps moving so quickly that before you know it, you wake up one morning and you're 36 years old, as I am, and there's a part of me that still in my head feels like, no, I'm like, I'm 18, I'm just back from Shana Aleph, I've got my whole life ahead of me. Then I pause for a minute, and I remind myself that I'm a married man, and I have 4 children, and I pay a mortgage on a house, and I've been teaching for many years already, and life moves on. And if you don't carve out time to stop and to think, and to make a cheshbon and nefesh, then life really can just fly right by. We read a couple weeks ago, Parshas Kisavo. And I want to go back, and I'm sure we spoke many times about the word Hayom, and how it's a code word for Rosh Hashanah. I want to just go back to that one more time. Pasuk says in Kisavo, Vayadaber Moshe v'Kohanim v'Halavim, Akol Yisrael Lemor, Haskes u'Shema Yisrael Hayom. Now I read the Pasuk really incorrectly in terms of the punctuation, so I read the Pasuk again. Haskes u'Shema Yisrael, listen, Haskes, we'll talk about in a minute what that word means. Haskes u'Shema Yisrael, Hayom hazeh niyesa la'am la'Hashem Elokecha. Today you are becoming the nation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'shamata b'kol Hashem Elokecha v'asisa es mitzvosa v'eschukov asher anochi mitzavcha hayom. But many of the Svarim pick up on that phrase, Haskes u'Shema Yisrael hayom. Hayom is always a word that we have to think about in terms of living in the moment. Of trying to be mekabel the Torah every day, hayom. Hayom, as I mentioned again a moment ago, is a code word for Rosh Hashanah. It's an opportunity for schachos and new beginnings, like the Zohar says, like Rashi says in the first parak of Iyov. What does it mean, haskeis u'shma Yisrael hayom? What happens on Rosh Hashanah in terms of these days, the Aseres Me'tshuva, from hayom, which is Rosh Hashanah, and these days forward? But what does it mean, haskeis u'shma Yisrael? So let's learn the Svarno. The Svarno translates the word haskeis, tzayer b'machshavas. Tzayer, paint a picture, paint an image in your machshava, in your mind. An image of what? An image of what you want to be. Haskes doesn't just mean that I'm listening in sort of a passive way. Haskes means that when I hear an idea and I'm moved by it, so I have to respond to it. I have to think deeply about that, and I have to try to figure out, okay, so now what becomes of me because of that? Haskes u'shema. Again, the Pashup Shah, both words mean to listen, but they're different types of listening. Haskes is the Svarno Tzayer, paint a picture. U'shema, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad doesn't just mean listen, Jewish people. Shema means, as Svarno says, hisbone, to meditate upon, to reflect deeply upon. So therefore many of the Svarim explain, and again with this understanding of the Svarno it's that much sharper, Haskes u'shema Yisrael Hayom, that when Hayom arrives, when Rosh Hashanah arrives, we have to start listening differently. We listen to the shofar, we try to listen differently. We try to listen to our tefillos differently. We try to listen to the messages Hashem is saying to the world differently. Haskes, draw a picture, u'shma, and meditate upon it. Hayom, from Rosh Hashanah forward, create an image of where you'd like to be.
Everyone knows the shofar, the words of the Rambam, comes to wake us up. But if you look at the continuation of that Rambam, Minuchas Tshuva Perak Gimel Halacha Dalid, the Rambam says, again, Uri Yishena Mishen Aschem, wake yourself up. V'nir Damim Hakitzu Mitardem Aschem, and wake up from your deep slumber. And then the Rambam says, V'chapsu B'maaseichem. Chapsu B'maaseichem means reflect deeply upon your actions. Cheshbon Nefesh. In other words, what's the shofar waking us up to do? The shofar is waking us up from just the run of life to like be shaken for a moment and to start thinking again. Chapsu b'maaseichem v'chizru b'tshuva. Once you start thinking, all of a sudden the person could be chozer b'tshuva. I want to tell you an amazing story that I saw from Rav Aryeh Shechter. Rav Aryeh Shechter, Rav in Eretz Yisrael, was a chavrusa of Rav Chaim Kanievsky. For many years they put out some of his svarim in Halacha and in Drashos. So he says that more than 20 years ago, there was a family that, I hate to use the word chiloni, because the Lubavitcher Rebbe said you can't call a Jew chiloni. A Jew is kadosh. You can't say that a Jew is secular. There's no such thing as a secular Jew. But a Jew, a family of Jews in Eretz Yisrael who are not yet Shomer Torah mitzvos. And the parents started to begin their process of returning. The organization called Lev Achim, they organized Shurim and many other things, and this family started to get involved, and slowly, slowly, they began the process of coming back. It just so happens at that time, one of their children, 15 years old, wasn't yet on the bandwagon with his parents in terms of coming back to the Kaddish Baruch Hu, and he wasn't Shomer Shabbos, he was in a car on a Friday night, got into a terrible accident, and was killed, Rachman al-Tzlan. But this family was very beloved. Thousands of people came to the Levaya, a very great tragedy. Thousands of people came to their home during Shiva, and the parents felt this was such an opportunity to try to pull people in. Which again, amidst their brokenness, that they could have such a clarity is an unbelievable thing. So they decided, we want to have a shiur in our home every Shabbos. And this Rav Aryeh Shechter was invited one time to give the shiur in their home. So he says he came to the house, and he started to speak. A half hour went by, very captivating. People want more and more, thirsting for Torah. An hour goes by, an hour and a half goes by. Imamish has everyone pulled in. A group of 15-year-old boys, friends of this Nebuchadnezzar, this person who was killed in the car accident, come to Rav Shechter as he's teaching Torah, and they say, we want to show you a notebook with some of the writings of our friend. And they present him this notebook. And he opens up the notebook, and he sees in this notebook there are a series of poems or songs that were written, nine songs that were written by this 15-year-old boy who was killed in this car accident. And he opens up to one of them, and he starts to read it to the people who are gathered there. And here's what he wrote. Again, I don't know the tune to this song, but here are the lyrics to the song. The song goes like this. He wrote, Kishayinu Kitanim. When we were little. He was only 15 years old. But when we were kids, when we were little, Hayinu Choshvim, we would think that when we get older, Haviu Lanu Harbei Tzatzuim, that they would bring us many toys, many playthings. Who's they? The world. Right? Meaning the world is going to present you with all sorts of things to distract you. Bigger toys, smaller toys. A car could be a toy, a house could be a toy, a phone could be a toy. There's many toys. Bishvil lahafsik lachshov, to get us to stop thinking. That the world is going to present us with all sorts of toys, playthings, satsuim. Bishvil lahafsik lachshov. But he says, however, I wasn't convinced. Himshachti lachshov. As I got older and I saw that many people around me were becoming distracted and getting busy with things of this world, Himshachti lachshov, I continued to think. Chashavti v'chashavti, chashavti v'chashavti. I thought, and I thought, and I thought, and I thought. Achagati l'maskan, until I came to the following conclusion. Shayekadai li lavo la'olam, it's worth it for me to come to this world. Nebuch, 15 years old, he didn't see too much of this world. But the little bit he saw in this world, Shayekadai li lavo la'olam, kidei legalos mi bar eila. That it was worth it for me to come to this world to be a thinking person who recognizes who created all of this. A poem, a song written by a 15-year-old boy who wasn't learning in yeshiva, wasn't necessarily davening or keeping Shabbos, yet he felt this very deep connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why? Because he was thinking. The story doesn't end there. Rav Aryeh Shechter says, 20 years later, after this, and everyone was very in his spa when they heard this poem, it really got them thinking. He says, 20 years later, he's in northern Israel, a town called Rechasim, and he's giving a series of shiurim on the Chazon Ish Emunah B'Tachon, Chazon Ish Sefer Emunah B'Tachon. He said, two B'nai Torah come over to him after the shiur. People, 35 years old or so, and they say, Kvod HaRav, do you recognize us? So he says, no, not especially. Have we met before? They said, yes, we met 20 years ago. We were there, we were friends of that young man who was killed in that car accident. And we were there that Shabbos afternoon when you were teaching Torah. And we were there when you opened up that notebook and read that poem, that song that our friend wrote, Chashavti Lachshov. I continued to think. And we started thinking that Shabbos. Because we realized if our friend was a thinking person, and he wasn't able to have many years of life to spend thinking, we made a commitment right then and there, we're going to keep thinking. And you know what Maskana we came to? Same Maskana our friend came to. We went weiter. We became Shomer Shabbos, Shomer Torah Mitzvos. And they said to Rabbi Yishev, you should just know, many of our friends who were there that Shabbos afternoon also became from. They were all very shaken by this. That one 15-year-old boy started to think, and unfortunately he himself never had the chance to be fully Chozer B'tshuva, but he got so many others to be Chozer B'tshuva. That's what the Rambam says. Chapsu b'maaseichem. Start when you hear the shofar, for these days, these precious days of being Omid Lefnei HaMelech, start thinking about what you want to do with your life. V'chizru b'tshuva, and then come back in tshuva. My daughter the other day was listening to a song which had the words to a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, and it got me thinking. And I wanted to share with you this Mishnah in Pirkei Avos as really a roadmap, as a three-step recipe of what a person can be and maybe should be doing during these days. It's the Mishnah, the first Mishnah in the third parak of Avos. Akavya ben Mahalal al Omer. Akavya ben Mahalal said the following. Histakel b'shlosha dvarim. Histakel. Histakel means, doesn't just mean to glance. Magen Avraham writes by Hilchos Kiddush Levana, right? Even though a person is not supposed to normally stare at the moon, because it's kashal v'shichacha, Chazal say it causes a person to forget things, by Kiddush Levana you have to look at the moon. But there's a difference between looking and staring. And the same thing is true when it comes to staklus benashim, when it comes to shmirah seinayim. You're walking down the street and you see an attractive person, right? That's not aser, but if you stare, if you continue to look, that's already the iser of a staklus. So it's a surah achrein levatkan achrein necha. Don't be drawn after your eyes. So istakil doesn't just mean to catch a glimpse of. Istakil means to meditate upon. Haskeis u'shma. Draw a picture and be mizbonin on the Father. So says Akavi ben Mahalal, istakil b'shlosh edvarim. Meditate deeply. Think deeply about these three things. Ve'einata bali de'aver, and you'll never do an aver. Okay, so that sounds like a good plan for these days. How can I make sure that I do less averos next year? Says Akavi ben Mahalal, think about these three things. Da me'ayin basa. Know first and foremost where you come from. Know where you're going. And who are you going to stand before in din v'cheshbon, in judgment? Now the end of the Mishnah, for those who remember the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, is very depressing. It's very morbid, to put it lightly. Yeah. What's the end of the Mishnah? Me'ayin basa, where do you come from? You come from a tipa srucha, a putrid drop, a little drop of zera, of seed, that formed over the course of 9 months in the mother's womb. Right, so you come from basically, you know, from almost nothing. Lana Taholeich, where are you going? You're going back to the grave. And your flesh is going to rot. And you're going to return to dust. And the worms and the maggots are going to pick at your flesh. Again, it's a very weighty sounding mission. And who are you going to stand before in judgment? With the Malach Malchim Lachim Kadosh Baruch Hu, who's going to scrutinize your every action. Right? Now, if you think about that, yeah, Hestakel B'Shlosh Advarim. If you think about where man comes from, you think about where we're heading, and we think about who our neshama is going to have to give an accounting before, yeah, you know, the pashup shot's good. We don't really need a darshan in the Mishnah too much if we actually stopped and thought about it. There's a lot there. But I want to think about this Mishnah as a recipe, or as a series of guidelines for making a cheshbon and nefesh during these days, during the Aser Yemei Teshuva. What does it mean? First, a person has to reflect, da me'ayin basa, know where you came from. Not know where you came from in the broader sense of what Akav and Mahalal saying, know how you were physically formed, but know where you came from. If I don't stop and think about Tav Shanai and Zion, if I don't look back to what happened over the course of this past year, so how can I possibly start to create a picture of where I'd like to be in Tav Shanai and Ches? I have to look back. I have to make an honest cheshbon and nefesh. My daughter came home the other day. She started middle school. She came home, sixth grade, and she said, Daddy, I learned something today that you're really going to like. And she gives me this piece of paper, and it says, at the top of the paper, it says, a letter to you, dear Tav Shin Ayin Zayin. And it's written like a person writing to last year, to Tav Shin Ayin Zayin, you know, saying like, you know, we had good days, we had bad days, there were times where, you know, I got it right, and I used my time well, there were times where I squandered opportunities. So if I don't look back, if I don't have a conversation with Tav Shin Ayin Zayin, if I don't look back and reflect on the things I did right this past year, and the areas that I struggled this past year, then it's very hard to move forward. talk about the times that I made the right choices and I prioritized the right things, and the times that I didn't. The times where I gave in to my Yetzirah, and the times where I didn't make the right choice, and I had mixed up priorities. Dame ayin basa. Step number one to not doing averos is to look back and to know where I came from. Step number two, says Akavi ben Mahalel, le'anat aholich, where are you heading? Again, the Svar knows haskeis u'shma Yisrael hayom. Where do I want to be? Well, paint an image of who I want to be. What are my goals? How can you possibly enter Tavshin Hayin Ches and ask that it should be a better year if you don't have a goal for yourself? La'anat aholich, where am I trying to get to? How can I get there? How can I find the location if I don't know what I'm trying to get to? I don't know where I'm trying to be. Some of us last year, we learned Tzav Viziris from the Piyazat Sarebi. And he writes in Ozbeis a very powerful thing in his Sefer of, it's like a somewhat biographical work. It's a diary. It's a journal that he wrote, he kept for himself. Im ritzoncha la'avod es Hashem, u'la'alos es atmecha mal. The Piyazat Sarebi writes in Tzav Viziris Ozbeis, if you want to be a growing Jew, and you want to lift yourself up from one year to the next, and listen to this line, it's a powerful line. V'lo ta'amod b'shnas ha-shiv'im l'chayecha k'biyom ha-bar mitzvah shalcha. If you want to make sure that you're not one of these 70-year-old Jews who still acts as the spiritual maturity of a bar mitzvah boy, how can I make sure that I'm growing? That when I'm 13, and I'm 14, and I'm 15, and I'm 16, and I'm 18, and I'm 22, and I'm 24, how can I make sure that every stage of my life I'm a growing person? He says, do the following. B'chol shana asei l'cha matara. Every year you have to have a goal. La'anat aholich. Where am I trying to get to? In Tavshin Ayin Ches. Tzayer ba'atzmecha. Same word the Svarno used in Kisavo. Tzayer ba'atzmecha. Paint a picture for yourself. He says, if your name is Reuven, Lamashal. So paint a picture. What should Reuven look like by the end of Tavshin Ayin Ches? And at the end of Tavshin Ayin Ches, sit down with that picture of Reuven, which maybe you drew in your mind, maybe you even wrote down some bullet points on a piece of paper, and match them up. See, did I become the Reuven I claimed I was trying to be? And if I didn't, Rachman Alitzlan, says the Piyazat Sarebi, Im Yigia Shana Haba, and you measure yourself, V'lo Agata Afila Karsule HaRuven Shal Shana Chadasha, and you haven't even reached the heels of the Ruvain that you set out to be. So he says again a very powerful thing that should shake us during these days. Yeah, Be'inecha Shechos V'Shalom Chalid V'Chas Lo HaRach Yam. You should look at your life as if Chas V'Shalom, you haven't had a Richas Yamin. You haven't gone Viter in your life. So Tavshin Ayin Zayin was the same as Tavshin Ayin Ches, will be the same as Tavshin Ayin Ches. You've lived the same year over and over and over again. And then you're one of those 70-year-old men, who I'm sure we can all, unfortunately, we can picture such a person, who has the spiritual maturity, has the kavanah during davening, has the commitment to learning, that he had when he was a 13-year-old kid. And maybe even less, because at least when he was 13, there was a hope that maybe, you know, maybe I'll become something one day. He put on his tefillin with excitement. And now he's just gone year after year after year, living the same year over and over again. And the Piyazetzer concludes by saying, that's the chiddush of Avram Avinu. That Avram was zokein boba yamin. It's really based on a Zohar Kaddush. Avram shel hayom hayu shel hayom, v'lo Avram shel etmo. That the Avram of today was an authentically new Avram. Hayom. B'chol yom yuvei necha kichadashim. New every day. He was mamish zokein. Arichas yamin. The emes. A long life, because he didn't live the same day over and over and over. It was Rosh Hashiva in Eretz Yisrael, with Eliyahu Mishkovsky. Hashiva of Kvar Hasidim. And he said that it was told by one of the Talmidim the one time he was at a wedding. And he's standing at this wedding and he's watching the Bnei Yeshiva dancing at the wedding. And he's standing on the side and one of the Talmidim notices that he has a tear rolling down the side of his cheek. He's crying to himself. Now this Rav Eliyahu Mishkovsky was not a very emotional person. It was very uncharacteristic for him to get emotional, let alone to cry, certainly Barabim. So one of the Talmidim got nervous. They thought something was wrong. They went over to him. They said, Rosh Hashiva, is everything okay? He says, yeah, everything's okay. You're feeling okay? Rosh Hashiva's feeling okay? Okay. He says, well, I noticed Rosh Hashiva was crying. Rosh Hashiva doesn't usually cry. He said, maybe you're very emotional because one of the older Bachurim in Yeshiva finally got married. It's a very emotional wedding. And then all the friends are so happy for this fellow. No, that's not why I'm crying. He says, Rosh Hashiva, why are you crying? So he says, I'm watching the dancing. And I noticed, as Jews dance, we go around in a circle. And he said, I started to think to myself a very deep Musar lesson. Because there's many people in life who pick up their feet and take a step forward, and take a step forward, or what perceives to be a step forward, and really they're just going around the circle. Their mom is riding the merry-go-round of life. So it looks, in their perception, they imagine that they're moving forward, but they're coming back to the same spot over and over and over again. And they might also have a big smile on their face, like these Bachrim dancing at the wedding. Right? But It's so tragic that they're living the same life over and over and over again, going around and around and around the same. La'ana taholich. Step number two to being matzliach during these days. First, let us know, where am I trying to get to? I want to move forward. I don't want to be like a 70-year-old bar mitzvah boy. I want to be like Avram Avinu, who was zakin baba yamin, to seize every day, hayom, in b'kolo tishmo. Like the Gemara says, Mashiach's ready to come, hayom, if we'll just listen in a deep way. Haskesu shema Yisrael hayom. To listen in a very deep way. And last but not least, concludes the Mishnah, says Rabbi Akiva ben Mahalalel, if they meet out to us, litain din v'cheshbon. Who are we standing before during these days, giving an account of? Who are we standing before? And I think there's a duality to this as well. Yes, on the one hand, we're standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who we can't outsmart, and we can't trick. And he's very demanding, as it also says in Pirkei Avos. The Baal HaBayis is dochik. The standards that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sets for us are not very low at all. Hashem expects tremendous, tremendous success from all of us. Right? But there's a balance of Avinu Malkeinu. On the one hand, Hashem is so demanding. On the other hand, he's a Melech Chafetz B'chayim. He's Erech HaPayim. He's patient with us. And he's giving us chances over and over again. And yet at the same time, the Gemara Bava Kama says that Hashem is not Mavater. Hashem doesn't let things slide. There's a story that I've shared in the past. I'll just repeat it in case anyone hasn't heard it, because it's the most wonderful story in the world. The story is that there were two Bachrim in Mir Yeshiva that they were learning one Zman. And it was one of those long afternoon seders where, you know, they were just a little burnt out. And they started to schmooze, started to talk to each other. Not about the Gemara. And they're schmoozing, and they're schmoozing, and they're schmoozing. And all of a sudden, one of them notices that one of the Rashi Yeshiva of Mir, Rav Nachum Pertzavitz, walked into the Beis Medrash. Nachum passed away in the 1980s. Rav Nachum was known to give an unbelievably clear shir, the real depth of the Gemara with the push-up shot, to the point that you almost couldn't learn the Gemara any other way by the time it was done with the sugya. And Rav Nachum starts making his way towards these bachrim who are learning. We're not learning, we're schmoozing. So one of them notices the Rashi Yeshiva is coming in that direction. So he elbows his chavrusa. Right? Rosh Hashiva's coming, you know? Gotta snap into position, you know, start learning. So they grab their standards and they start shuckling and they're getting all, you know, serious, and their thumbs are out, you know, looking like they're really deep into the sugya. And as Rav Nachum walks by, one of them blurts out really loudly to impress Rosh Hashiva, Tanu Rabbanon. So Rav Nachum stops, and Rav Nachum smiles and he says, ah, Bachan, it's so beautiful to see that you're so deeply engrossed in the learning. Rav Nachum says, I just want to point out that this man, we're learning Maseches Nedarim. And not once in Maseches Nedarim does it say Tanu Rabbanan. Not once in Maseches Nedarim does it say Tanu Rabbanan. It's true. Chaver, it's true. Not once in Maseches Nedarim does it say Tanu Rabbanan. They told the story to Rav Chaim Kanievsky and he started to chuckle. So he said to Rav Chaim, they said, what's so funny? So he says, it's true that it doesn't say Tanu Rabbanan in Maseches Nedarim, but on Chav Zayin and Aleph, there is one place where it says Dit Tanu Rabbanan. It's abbreviated, it's Dalit Tav Resh. So it could be Lam Mitzvos on the Bachrim, right? That people could know the Gemara, that there's no Tanu Rabbanan in Maseches Nedarim. I checked it, I went on the Bar Ilan thing, I checked it out. You know, not that I didn't doubt these great Gedolim. But it's unbelievable. So if you can't outsmart the Rosh Yeshiva, you're not going to outsmart the Rabbanu Shalom during these days. We have to know who we're standing in front of. The Melech is Chafetz B'chayim, but he's Dochek. And he's not Mavater. And Hashem has high expectations for us. By the way, the postscript of that story is that they told Rosh Steinman, Shlita in Eretz Yisrael, they told him that the Rav Chaim was able to have that Hosafa to the story. Rav Nachum said, there's no Tanu Rabbanan. Rav Chaim said, well, there's one. Did Tanu Rabbanan, Chav Zayin of an Aleph. So they said to Rav Steinman, they told him the story, and they said, what are you so nispal about? Well, why are you surprised? Why are you surprised that they shouldn't know the Gemara that well? Rav Steinman said, it's like a person, and I always had this question. When I go to the fruit market near our home, I always wonder how the ladies at the cash register know the prices, because it changes from one day to the next. Right? One day yellow peppers are $1.29, and the next day they're $1.19. One day they're 99 cents, right? And there's like 100 items in the store. So how do they know Balpeh, the whole inventory? And I'm always checking, like I always check, you know, like I always keep track of like one thing. Like, are they gonna, like, do they really know the price for Idaho potatoes as opposed to the yams? And they do, they always get it right. And I was always like so impressed by that. So Rav Steinman said, the mashal is the same thing as Chaim Kanievsky. This is his inventory, Taurus's inventory. He knows exactly what's in stock. He knows how many Tanur Abundans are in the Masechta. He knows how many times Abaye and Rava appear in any given Masechta. But again, if you can't outsmart your Rebbe, even though you think you can sometimes, right? If you can't outsmart your parents, even though you think you can sometimes, you certainly can't outsmart the Rabbanu Shalom. So on the one hand, yes, we're standing before Melech Malchei Amlachim Kadosh Baruch Hu, and it's a very weighty thing. But at the same time, like Rishal said, Avinu Malkeinu. There has to be a balance. And we have to remind ourselves over and over again that Hashem is a Melech Chafetz B'chaim. We have to be driven. We have to be able to look back and be honest. We have to make goals for ourselves moving forward and be honest. But we also have to approach these days with the severity and the intensity of the din, but at the same time, with a confidence that we can be Zocha B'din. That I can grow from year to year. That I can actually achieve those goals. That I don't have to paint a picture of who I'd like to be in a year from now, and then reflect in a year from now, I failed again. It's possible to be Matuyach. That Hashem is a Melech Chafetz B'chaim. He wants us to be Zocha B'din. Whereas Bruria rebuked her husband, Rabbi Meir, in Maseches Brachos on Daf Yud, that Hashem doesn't want to destroy us during these days. Hashem wants us to destroy our Averos, but He wants us to be Matzliach. He wants us to stand before Him and to daven, like our Rishnal said, Tfilas Chana, to go big, to ask for big things, to be confident, to be hopeful, and to set our sights on very, very great things for the year ahead. So Amir Hashem, if we could follow this recipe of Akavya ben Mahalala, one of the great Tanoim in this Mishnah Pirkei Avos. Again, the ayin basal, to be honest, that you have to pause for a minute and look back and say, what did I mess up in this past year? And be super honest with yourself about it. And then, la'anat ha'olik, where would I like to be? Right? If I don't have a goal, there's no way you're going to get there without a goal. In learning, in davening, in midos, what do I want to fix this year? To be practical about it. And lastly, to realize on the one hand, yes, these are very intense days, and I can't trick a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and I have to be very real, and not just assume that I'm going to make it year after year after year, that not everyone makes it, Rahman al-Itzlan, right? But at the same time, to have that confidence that I'm standing before a Melech who wants me to be Matzlich. It is a Melech Chafetz B'chaim. And Amir Tashem, each and every one of us, will be Zocha to have a Gemar Chasima Tova, be Zocha B'din, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu will answer all of our Bakashos with Tova.
Begin by thanking you two Rabbanim sitting next to me for this for the unbelievable Asoros that really, really is helpful before the Yom HaDin to understand the Chasima, Yom Kippur, what is up ahead in front of us. And I just want to add a question that always bothered me every year. You know, we're sitting, filling ourselves to capacity on Friday afternoon and every Erev of Yom Kippur, a mitzvah to eat. You walk into shul and you stay there for about 45 seconds until you have to go online for the bathroom. And you see the line is huge because everyone's there and you're trying to figure out another bathroom. That's the avoda of Kol Nidre. And suddenly afterwards, after you figure out a way and you stroll back into shul, and there's a klap at the bima, and they start with the words Kol Nidre. Kol Nidre. We're starting the avoda of Yom Kippur, annulling all of our vows. If I remember correctly, I don't chas v'shalom claim to be Reb Chaim Kanievsky, but I think that's on Chav Zayin Amabez in Nedarim. The concept of annulling Nedarim, of the concept of Hataras HaNeder. But Rabosai, the question that's always bothered me is, we just did this. We all did this on Erev Rosh Hashanah. Why? Why repeat it? Why do something that's not necessary? And even if you find me an explanation why what we did on Erev Rosh Hashanah, or for those of you that weren't here Erev Rosh Hashanah, we're going to do it. Why now? The climax. The essential part of Yom Kippur. This is the time that I'm going to go in. This is when I'm going to begin my avoda. You're making an announcement. All vows should be null and void. This is the way you open up. This is the way you present to me Yom Kippur. This is what Yom Kippur is all about. This is the most anticlimactic way to begin Yom Kippur, with Kol Nidre. That's question number one. Question number two is, if there's one part of the avodah of Yom Kippur, of the vidui on Yom Kippur, which is really the mitzvah of the Yom, is to be modeh and to admit to our chataim. If there's one chait that sticks with us throughout Yom Kippur, that we even enunciate and reflect upon, even when we're not even in the vidui process. No longer in the ilah are we going through the complete vidui. Yet there is one chait that we repeat. L'man nechtal be'oishek yadein. You know what the chait that we are going to repeat to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is? We are ganovim. We are gazlonim. We stole. Now, guys, I don't know about you, but I have a lot of al-chait to say when it's this Yom Kippur. I have a lot of things, unfortunately, that I have to be molded to. But Baruch Hashem, gezel is not number one on my list. I'm not saying it's not there and it's not needed to be said, but if you have to have one vidoy, one al-chait, one hodah, one admission that's going to carry through the rest of Yom Kippur all the way till the end of the ilah, my first and foremost one is not going to be Oshek Yadenu, is not going to be Gezel. Yet for some reason, that's the one that stuck it out, that's pasted in every single tefillah again and again, even when we're not and we're done and we're complete with the vidoy process. Why? What is it about Gezel? What is it about specifically Oshek Yadenu that we have to even reiterate when it comes to even the Ne'ilah, when all the other Al-Chaits are done? And finally, I think one of the most fascinating questions, when we analyze the actual mitzvah Shebiyom that I'm talking about, the mitzvah that we have on this day, and we associate Yom Kippur, everyone knows Yom Kippur is the day that there's a mitzvah to do what? To do vidui. To confess. Where does it say that in the Torah? Where does it say in the Torah that a person should confess? Where is there a concept in the Torah called vidui, called confession? So Rabbi Shechter always likes to point this out. It's in Parshas Nasa. It's talking about a guardian, a shomer, that was supposed to watch a pikadon, Meseches Baba Metzia, and what happens? He said, yeah, it got lost. I don't know what happened to it, yeah, but I wasn't involved, it wasn't my fault. And guess what? The guy was caught in a lie. Adim came to court, testified against the guardian, and what does he do? He's mode. And then he has to bring a carbon, he has to pay, and etc. What the Parsha deals with in Parsha's Nos. And the Torah there says, Vihisvado. He has a mitzvah to be mode, to be misvad. That's it. That's the source. That's vidui. Rabbosai, what in the world is going on with Yom Kippur? The Rambam tells us, the mitzvah Shebiyoyim is what? Is Lisvados. Where? Where'd you get that from? Parshas Noso? I don't know, get the Shomrim. You'll call on the people. Who was a Shomer this year? Who happened to have watched The Guardian? Who followed the laws of Parshas Noso, Parshas Bamitzia, and was caught in a lie? Let him be Misvade. What do I have to do with the mitzvah of Vidui? There's no mitzvah vidui when it comes to tshuva. Where do we get this idea that Yom Kippur is all about vidui? It doesn't say that in the Torah. There's no mitzvah vidui in the Torah. It's limited to this specific parsha. So we're both saying, what in the world is going on here? What's going on with Kol Nidre? What's going on with our vidui and the one chait that we're reiterating again and again, even after we're done with all the al chaits, the vidui? And why in the world are we being molde? Why are we being misvade? Let's cut it. Aseret be'tshuva. Be mekabel. Make a master plan, like the Rabbanim said beautifully. Make a picture in your mind. Shoot big, like Rabbi Shnal said. Make a picture in your mind, like Rabbi Weinberg said. And let's call it quits. Let's end it. Let's have a party on Yom Kippur. Why do we have to be molded? So I'd like to suggest the following idea. And it's based on a story that really moved me when I heard it. It's a story my wife told me. And I think this could answer all of our questions. There was once a woman who Nebuch was blind. And Baruch Hashem, although she was blind, she, Baruch Hashem, had a husband that was an unbelievable caretaker. A husband that would assist her. A husband that would guide her. A husband that would help her get to wherever she needed to get to. And one day the husband came home and told his wife, "I heard on the radio that there is an opportunity. There is an opportunity for a transplant that could help your cornea, your specific issue. There is hope." And she can't believe it. And he gives her the number. And she calls. And she can't get through. But she doesn't give up. She calls again, day after day. Finally, she gets through to the person answering the service and in charge of the office and appointments for this special transplant. And she says, "I would like to sign up for this transplant. I don't care how much it is. We will find the money." And she says, the person answering the phone, "There are 334 people waiting ahead of you on the waiting list. You're too late. Would you like me to put you on the waiting list?" And she can't even stay on the phone to say yes. She hangs up the phone. She turns to her husband and she begins to cry. And her husband says, "What is it?" And she said, "There's not a chance that I will qualify for this transplant." 5 days later, the husband comes home, runs to his wife, and said, "You're not going to believe it. I found a connection. I figured out a way. I knew someone who knew someone. And I put you on top of the list. And you on Thursday are going to be accepted for the transplant." And his wife can't believe it. And she's ecstatic. And this is just unbelievable. It's like she's going to be reborn. And she's jumping for joy, holding her husband, hugging her, hugging him. And they go to the surgery. And Baruch Hashem, the transplant is successful. And she walks out of the operating room, okay, a little bit dark at the beginning, but as a few hours, a few days pass, she begins to get accustomed to the light around her, and she begins to see the world like a reborn child. And she is running around with her husband, but she notices something that she was never aware of. She didn't know that all those times and throughout her life, she was never told, and she couldn't believe it, her husband was her caretaker, even though her husband was blind as well. And that initially was something incredible. But as time passed, and as she was living the dream and exploring the world, her husband, that was blind, that was tagging along, that was no longer able to keep up to the pace of someone who actually had eyes, was now becoming a burden, was someone that she had to shepherd. And months passed, and a year passed. And she suddenly started to distance herself from her husband. And she suddenly disconnected to her husband. Until one day, she turned to her husband and she said, "Ad kan, I have great plans. I want to see the world. I want to go to Greece and I want to go to South Africa. And I don't think it's going to work between the two of us." And she filed for divorce. Her husband was silent, accepted her decision, and wrote a letter. Packed up his bags, and without her noticing, left the letter on her pillow for her to read after he left. And the letter said as follows. "Dear Rachel, I want you to know I still love you like I always did. And I understand the decision that you've made. And I accept it, and I'm going to move on as well. But I just want you to know that I have one request that you follow even after we get divorced and we live and we move on our separate ways. There's something that I want you to take care of. Those eyes that you received, they are mine. Please take care of them." Rabosai, the Gemara in Nida tells us on Daf Lamed something fascinating. Kadosh Baruch Hu, when we are in the fetus, in our mother's womb, when we are developing, the Gemara tells us that there's a ner doleg on our head that we, the Maharal explains, represent. We're entirely in the neshama. And that's why we're holding in Shas and Poskim, and we're learning Yomim V'Layla, because that's the only reality that we're in. Says the Maharal, then a malach comes and hits us and we forget all the Torah. What does that mean? Explains the Maharal, that neshama that existed as an independent entity now is not ner doluk al gabe rosho, now is within the guf. We now become the entity that we are today, that we have a neshama in a different reality, encased in a body, in another surrounding. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us in that Gemara Nida a fascinating statement before we come into this world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says before we take that neshama and places it into that guf, protecting it, guarding it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "Ani mashbia alecha." It's the first shvuah we take. You take a shvuah before you enter this world, before you're born. Tihiyeh tzadik ve'al tihiyeh rasha. You should grow. You should arise. You should meet the challenges. And you should come out righteous. And don't fall into the pits of this reality, of this world. And then we are born and we are placed into the gulf. And then we come into the reality that we're in. Chevra. Leman nechtal me'oshek yodenu. If we want to summarize everything about Yom Kippur, if there's one chait that encapsulates everything that we're talking about, it's all of the senses that were given to us, the eyes that were delivered to us, the pikadom that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us like that man, and we unfortunately abused it. We stole from HaKadosh Baruch. If we want to really go through the complete process of tshuva, we have to go back to Parshas Nasa. We have to be honest with who we are. We are a guardian. We are a shomer. Shomer that got a pikadon, that got this neshama. This neshama to stay a tzaddik. This neshama to say tehora. This neshama to keep growing. And where have we gotten to? We've ran after the physical pleasures of the guf. all of those hedonistic entities in the world, and we have sworn falsely. Our shvua that we took when we were born really ultimately turned into be a shvua sheker. So let's go back to Parshas Nosa. We are a shomer pikado. We are a guardian watching over our neshama tahora. Our neshama tahora that was supposed to stay not damaged. Our neshama tahora that was supposed to connect to the eyes that were given to us, to the hands that were given to us, to the ears that were given to us, to cleave together and to be on the same mission as the neshama tahora, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Mashbia Lios Tzadik. And yet, we face Yom Kippur, and we recognize all of our shvuos, all of our commitments, all of our nedarim that we've taken in our life, to some extent, are false. And to a certain extent, we are Parshas Nosa. We are a Shomer HaPikadon that swore falsely, that now has to go through the Vidur process. And if you want to know one broader category, one title, to now encompass all of our chatoim in the Al-Chaitz, it's Oshek Yadena, it's Gezel, it's stealing from HaKadosh Baruch. That's why we begin the Yom Kippur experience with those important words of Kol Nidrei U'Kol Shvuei. Any commitment, any promise, the ultimate commitment, let it be null and void. Please, HaKadosh Baruch, we recognize that we didn't hold up to our commitments, that we didn't hold up to our purpose for living in this world. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, have rachmanis on us, because we're now entering into a new zone. We are now going to reconnect the wires. We are now going to remove ourselves from the Chamesh Inuyim, from the five physical aspects of this world, which now builds a new reality that allows our neshama and that same pikadon that you told us to focus on and to be the leading entity and the driving force in our life of Mashbia Ani Alecha Ti Yetzad Ibalti Yerusha. Now I'm going to go through a Yom Kippur experience that's a natural habitat for that neshama to lead me. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm going to reaffirm that commitment. I'm going to stand up to that commitment. And in Mirtz Hashem, I will be successful. So please, forgive me. Please understand that I got lost in the process. But I'm still a trustworthy guardian. I'm still a trustworthy shomer. And therefore, I enter into the Yom Kippur with that approach. After we say Kol Nidrei. And after we recognize why God gave us our eyes, what does He want us to do with our eyes? Like we say in the Tevilah Zaka, that's the most important tefillah, Rabosai. If I can urge anything, make sure, like the Chafetz Chaim urged everyone, make sure you get to shul on time. In my shul, I add extra time to the times to make sure that people have the ability to say Tevilah Zaka. Such an important tefillah. But it really, if you read it in the English, Rabosai, it says exactly what we're saying. It takes all those evarim, all those dimensions of the physical body, and redirects them back to the neshama. Redirects them back to the shvu and the Gemara Nida of the purpose of why we're in this world. So Mirtz Hashem, with this new approach, with all this chizuk that we got from these Rabbanim that are sitting to the right and to the left of me, Mirtz Hashem, this Yom Kippur will be a different Yom Kippur. This Yom Kippur will be an ability and will enable us to stay on the path, to really be true guardians, to be effective guardians. And in Mirtz Hashem, when we present HaKadosh Baruch Hu in an authentic way, that's what we want to do. And with our grand plan and with our design, Mirtz Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be mezaka all of us with a Gemar Chasima Tova and a year full of Peiros, Hatzlacha, Simcha, Bracha, and Nachas. Shkoyach, guys.